Hello, guys. Welcome to Straight Popcorn, episode number 20, where we sit down and we spend the next hour talking about Batman 89, Batman 91, some people call it Batman Returns, and Batman Forever, and yes, we do kind of touch on the orphan stepchild, Batman and Robin, and the film that actually almost was, Batman Eternal, also another Joel Schumacher film that was vetoed after the failure of Batman and Robin and made so many people rejoice. So, and we kind of get into a lot of our personal childhood stories and how we look at the character.
Yeah, now don't be alarmed. This is our 20th episode, so we wanted to do something a little special and give you guys like a bonus pod. But it is number 20, and we thought the best way to do that was talk about something we're both obsessed with, which is Batman, which you probably wouldn't want to hear an hour of us talking about Star Wars right now, because we talk about Star Wars on a scenario podcast that we do. But this is a special episode for both of us because this is like a real landmark film for us, and we wanted to share it with you guys on our 20th episode, and hopefully there'll be 20 more and then plus some to come. Yep. So sit back, relax. You got that Bat Dance LP ready?
Bat Dance! Yes, I do.
Okay. Let's go ahead and hit that shit.
Oh, I got a live one here.
Batman 89, 25th anniversary, just happened last week, in fact. And, you know, damn, what can you say about Batman 1989? I mean, it is my absolute film that I go to when I just want to watch something and I don't know what to watch and I just have to watch something. I will go to Batman 89 on a regular basis. It's a pivotal film. How do you feel about it? What are your thoughts and everything about the film?
Yeah, I mean, okay, let's start off. Let's take a little step back real quick.
Sure.
So, as a kid, the superhero film that was most repeatedly watched in my household was Superman.
Mm-hmm.
And Superman, while it was innovative for its time, never really quite embodied that superhero that we saw on page.
Mm-hmm.
And when, you know, 88 hit and MTV was a huge thing, they still play music back then, there was an announcement that there would be a Batman film, and that Batman film would star Michael Keaton. Which, at the time...
And everyone loved it and thought it was the best casting choice on the planet, am I right?
No, they fucking hated it.
Yes, Mr. Mom is Batman.
Nobody liked this idea. Nobody understood the decision. But when we first got our first trailer for it, everybody went wild.
Mm-hmm.
Because nobody had ever seen this type of superhero brought to the big screen. And I remember as a child, just that was like, it was like seeing Star Wars again for the first time.
Yeah.
Because it had two of the biggest stars of this time. I mean, it had Michael Keaton and it had Jack Nicholson.
Right.
And it was had a soundtrack produced by one of the biggest artists of all time, Prince, which is still to this day probably one of my favorite records.
Yep.
I can listen to that soundtrack over and over again. But I remember going to see the movie with my mom. My mom was a huge Adam West Batman fan.
Mm-hmm.
We were big Monkees fans. So we watched those shows on repeat from Nickelodeon over and over again. Me and my mom, I mean, we watched a lot of films together, but this is probably the first film that I remember really, really bonding with my mother on. And we walked up and my mom pulled me out of daycare early that day. It was the day that it was released and we waited in line and I had never seen anything like that. And keep in mind, like probably one of my first film going experiences were movies like Return of the Jedi, E.T., keep going. I'm not, but saw Back to the Future in the theater.
Mm-hmm. That's cool.
And this was something I had never seen. This was like Beatlemania in a sense. Mm-hmm. You know, it was like, oh, look at all these people. We're all here to see this amazing idea of a film.
Mm-hmm.
And when we went in, we got in the theater, sat down. Dude, I have never in my life like experienced epicness in a film, especially in that time, that turned out so well.
Yeah.
I mean, the excitement you could feel in the room, everybody had their Batman shirts on, like, and it was just, it was an event. It was an event film. Like, even to this day, I can't think of a movie that could ever capture that feeling.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I remember as a kid, I mean, I was a few years younger than you. I was probably 5 when the film came out. Well, no, I was born in 83. I was a little older than 5.
I was about to turn 10.
Yeah, okay. I would think I was, I was about 5 or 6 or something like that. Yeah, I think that's right. Anyway, my mom actually was living out of state at that point. She was living in California, so she was trying to build a life for, both of us there, but I was still living in Arkansas with my grandparents. But when she came to town, like, I never, ever went once with my grandparents to a movie. They just did not do that. And my aunt and my uncle were substantially older than me, so they didn't really want to drag me along to movies. That would only happen when Ghostbusters 2 came out in 91. Mm-hmm. Then I finally started going seeing films with them. But my mom came to town, knew that I absolutely adored Batman, because I definitely was watching a lot of the Adam West stuff with my grandfather. And she had already seen this film. She recorded like 22 times, an insane amount of times. You know, she was in her 20s, so, I mean, this is what she was doing. She was enthralled with the film, and the first thing that I remember doing with her when she came into town is she took me, and we went and saw Batman. And I had been seeing the billboards, like, leading up to that, you know, like, you had that big golden crest with a bat symbol on it. That thing, just every single time I saw it, I was just so enamored with it, because it was just, I'd never seen anything like that before. Like, there was no pictures of the cast or anything like that. All it was that giant logo, and you knew exactly what that meant. And it felt like prestigious. I don't know. It really was amazing. And, of course, I had the Batman logo t-shirt on. I think that was the first thing that she got me when she came into town, and then she told me we're going to go see the movie. And for, like, the next 2 hours, if I was a Batman fan already at that point, then I became, like, an Uber fan. You know, it was just everything that was happening on screen. All the things that I saw, you know, I was very impressionable. And all of those things left a lasting mark on my brain. You know, the visual style of the film. You know, the whole gothic kind of noir feel that they created in that atmosphere. The characters, the actors, everything. It instantly became iconic to me and something that I wanted to see more of. And so, you know, during her trip out, you know, we saw that film at least 2 or 3 more times, you know. And I remember just, it was such an amazing feeling. Not just the film, but also going with my mom and having that experience that I can kind of look back on and everything like that. And, you know, that's why that film is so important to me. And, you know, and it gets a lot of shit today. You know, I mean, you know, people look at it as like, well, remember when we used to think this film was dark, you know, whatever. And it's like, if you were watching the film just thinking like, oh, it's dark, that's why it's good, then you missed so much. The film was great because it just really embraced, I don't know, it embraced the atmosphere that was. The actors really believed what they were doing. They just kind of embodied the characters, and something really magical about what they were able to achieve with that film. And it's something that'll never leave me, and something that never has. Everything that I do today, especially my artwork, all is very heavily influenced by the imagery of that film. And so I guess those are my personal memories about Batman 89. So,
yeah, I mean, the thing about that film is, you know, everybody can hate all they want to. Sorry, I had something weird happen there.
Sure, no
music
problem.
Started playing through my headphones. I was like, what is this pop-up ad that's on my internet browser? But anyway, the thing, yeah, I mean, everybody can shit on the movie all they want to.
Mm-hmm.
But really, you can't. I mean,
yeah.
To sit there and compare it to anything of recent is kind of doing the movie a disservice.
Yeah.
Because that movie kind of set the precedent of our presidents, sorry, of films to come. I mean, yeah. If we didn't have Batman 89, we would never have The Avengers, we would never have Iron Man, we would never have anything like we have it now.
Yeah.
Because that movie really kind of took it up a notch. Mm-hmm. I hate to use the famous words of Emeril, but it did. It took it up a notch. And for what it did, it was very, very solid. Mm-hmm. It kind of knew how to walk that fine line of superhero film and comedy.
Yeah.
And to be honest, that's never, I mean, I can't think of a film off the top of my head right now that really has done that. I guess Iron Man mm-hmm. would probably be the closest.
Yeah.
And at the time, you know, I mean, we didn't have like a lot of the crazy special effects that we have now. And that movie, I can still watch to this day and not cringe.
Yeah. Yeah. I just watched it numerous times recently. So,
I mean, people bitch now about the CGI, but I mean, like, there's some great model work.
Yeah.
In Batman. And it didn't look cheesy. It didn't look matte, you know, mm-hmm. like when you watch, like, the old versions of the Star Wars films.
Right.
It really does stand the test of time. Now, the thing that got me the most, you know, when the movie came out is, you know, I was too young to remember, really, really remember the Star Wars merchandising, mm-hmm. you know. And from what I understand, that was pretty out, you know, it was going. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
Batman was really fucking going.
Yeah.
Like, you couldn't walk into, what was it? Was it Taco Bell that sponsored the movie?
Oh, I know McDonald's did forever because I remember those damn glasses that they sold had lead in them. yeah, it may have been Taco Bell. Taco Bell, I know, did Batman and Robin years later, so it's probably likely. That sounds about right. I think Batman did have sponsorship through Taco Bell because I remember the cinnamon twist being a big deal.
Yeah, you're right. You're mm-hmm. right. You're absolutely right.
Yeah, it's food and sugar and Batman. Those things definitely leave a lasting impression on my brain.
I mean, we were buying Batman stuff like it was going out of style.
Oh, yeah.
I remember my Batman obsession that summer went as far as I had Batman Chucks.
I did, too. I was just about to mention that. The one with the logo all over the shoe and
yes.
everything. Like, oh, my God.
Those.
I was looking for a pair of those recently because I was just like, I want to own a pair of those again. I will totally wear those all the time.
I still have the original top cards, two sets of them.
Oh, my God. I totally remember those damn things, too.
And if I do you have any of those?
Mm-mm. No.
If I find the second set, I will give them to you.
Oh, man. You are awesome.
I just need to go through the storage unit and get those out. But
didn't they come with gum, too?
It was like it looked like the Wrigley's gum that you buy, except it was stale.
Yeah, really bad.
You had to like crunch on that shit for a minute before it would like actually get to the point where you could chew it. and it was wax paper. And I'll tell you how I got this. For those that don't know, my grandparents own a vending machine company. And every summer I would go work for my grandfather. I think I started when I was about 9.
Mm-hmm.
And there's this warehouse that we go to up in Nashville where as a kid, I was just like dumbfounded by this place because right. you would walk in and like one wall would be nothing but Topps cards.
Man, and things have changed.
Yeah. To a kid at that time, I was like hitting the jackpot, you know, and
right.
they got it at wholesale prices. And one day my grandfather usually paid me, I think it was like $20 a week.
Oh, okay.
Or whatever the going rate and for an allowance for a kid at that time. I don't remember. But I remember I asked him, if I forfeited getting paid for the week, would he buy me a box of Batman cards?
Mm.
And he bought me a box of Batman cards.
Wow.
And I went home and I unwrapped every one of them. Of course, I was looking at the back, you know, the numbers, AB series, all that stuff. And ended up with two sets of them.
Wow.
So, yeah, that's where that kind of came from, and that's still cool. Do you remember and a lot of people might not remember this, you may,
mm-hmm.
The magazines that would come out when the movies would come out were a huge promotional tool, and they sometimes would come with the stickers?
I remember a few magazines. I remember Starlog, definitely.
Well, these were like released.
But these
by
were
Fox.
Like, yeah, these were official promotional magazines, right?
Mm-hmm. And yeah. They were focused on the movie, and you could take like there was shitloads of stickers in them, mm-hmm. and you would go through the book and you would read, and it would say put sticker whatever here.
Yeah, yeah, I remember those very clearly. Yeah. I definitely had a couple.
I have that somewhere too. For
wow,
I need to find it. But yeah, I mean. Just the promotional stuff at that time is nothing like today. You kids are missing out, man.
Yeah.
It's like they put out some cool shit.
Now, for the toys, if I'm not mistaken, there really wasn't a huge selection of toys. Not for the first film. When Returns came out, that definitely changed. When the first film came out, they were actually still using the figures from the, what was it, the Justice League or, no, the Superheroes Toys line.
Yeah, yeah,
which was really just repaints of Batman, which they made black and yellow, and then I think it wasn't even a repaint of the Joker, or maybe it was, but it was still even in the same box and stuff like that. They just put Batman on it, but I had those. They did make a Batmobile, and I had that, and then I took the Robin figure that they had from that line as well, because I was still very, you know, definitely had a big impression also from 60s Batman, so I'd go and play with that all day long. Like, there'd be no end to that. But yeah, I mean, as they continued making toys for that series though, especially for that, because they eventually did make other stuff. Like, they made a Batcopter that I definitely remember. There was a lot of like play set toys and stuff like that, so when my birthday started coming around, I started getting a lot of that stuff. And it was the best time ever. Like, that was, like, the most fun ever. Just playing with all that stuff, pretending to be Batman. It was great.
Yeah, I remember going, was it Service Merchandise?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that's some old shit. Because I don't even think Service Merchandise is around anymore. But it was either Service Merchandise or Sears, one of those. I remember going in, and I had never like really done a model car before.
Mm-hmm.
And Batman was the first model car I did. I had the model car of the Batmobile,
mm-hmm.
and had to glue it together and snap it and all that shit. So I love that. I had the remote control Batmobile.
Wow, that's pretty cool.
Don't know what happened to it, honestly. So yeah, I mean, the merchandising was just really cool thing. Mm-hmm. And I know this is kind of a little off subject, but it's still in relation to Batman. Did you see that they're about to release the Adam West Batman on Blu-ray finally?
Yeah, I did notice that. I'm really happy about it. It's been way too long since they've I mean, damn, like how long has Fox and Warner Brothers been at each other's throats about that series?
I know. Yeah, I'm so stoked about this. I actually kind of wish I had a Blu-ray player. I have all my movies stored on a hard drive.
Yeah.
I always get digital copies. But
they'll probably have digital copies actually available.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I want to see it cleaned up, because it to me, like, you know, going back to the beginning of what we're talking about, I mean, that was like a huge bonding thing for me and my mother. We would just mm-hmm. sit and watch Batman reruns on Nickelodeon all day. And, like, she would tell me the cultural significance of the show of that time.
Mm-hmm.
And it's always stuck with me. Like, I need to get into reading the Batman series that they released, where it's kind of a continuation of those. And I haven't gotten to them yet. I kind of want to just download a bunch of them and read them, especially the new one that Ralph Garman and Kevin Smith did. I really want to check that out and see what their take on that kind of thing is.
Yeah.
But I love the show. I mean, it was always... it was always funny. Mm-hmm. I mean, it wasn't meant to be serious, and they had a lot of fun with the concept, and they didn't swing so far away. And to me, it always kind of embodied, like, the earlier Detective Comics stuff.
Yeah.
And that kind of Batman is kind of forgotten these days, in a way.
Smiling Batman, yeah.
Right,
he really
right.
was the guy at the beginning, yeah.
And so, like, people are always like, well, that's not Batman. It's like, oh, yeah, at one point that was Batman.
They all kind of are. That's the great thing. They all kind of are. You know, writers and artists have come in and brought in their own impression. And actually, that kind of goes back to what we said, you know, just about the haters of these particular films, you know, or whatever. You know, each person has come in and brought something different to the character. You know, I maybe fell into that for a minute, especially with when Batman Begins came out. Like, oh my God, they really did something there. And then Dark Knight came out, and it's like, oh my God, they did something totally different with the Joker. And there was a lot of that talk about, oh my God, this is so much better. Can you believe that we used to like Jack Nicholson as the Joker? You know, and it's like, you always have to remember at the end of the day, you can like something, without hating what came before that. You know,
right.
You don't have to remove that thing from your heart. Because the thing with stuff like this, these things are totally in my heart. You know, like, they're stuck there. I can't escape it. I mean, right now in my room, like, I still haven't escaped Batman 89. I'll have to take a photo and post it. But I've got my Michael Keaton Batman from Hot Toys and the Joker figure right above it. You know, because that is my Batman, that is my Joker, and it will always be that way, you know, and it's not to say that what has come currently is bad, not at all. I love those films, but, you know, those things that, I don't know, as I said, they had such a huge impression on me, and like you said about your mom, like, having a real bonding experience over the whole process, especially watching 60s Batman and then going forward into the movies. I mean, it was the same for me and my mom. My mom, I barely saw her for the first 10 years of my life, you know, and I loved her deeply, and she loved me, of course, you know, and this was something that was really special to the both of us, you know, and we connected over it in a lot of different ways. I mean, you know, like, I wasn't just into the film either. I was really into the costumes, and I don't just mean the bat suit. I mean, like, you know, actually, there's a piece of art today that totally is Vicky Vale. I did a piece called The White Russian years ago, and wearing, like, a beret and stuff like that, and it's totally Vicky Vale in front of the courthouse taking photos of Bruce Wayne and the Joker and when he comes up and the whole mime get up. And, you know, those things had a lasting impression on me, you know? I don't know. I mean, now I'm just kind of going back into the memories of it all and everything like that, but I guess that's all you can do, so.
Yeah, and, you know, I remember when they announced Batman Returns was going to happen.
Mm-hmm.
And at that point, it was called Batman 2.
Yeah.
It wasn't called Returns yet. I remember what movie they attached the trailer to. I remember specifically going to see that movie. This is something before the internet happened.
Mm-hmm.
We would actually go see a shitty film to see a peek of the cool film.
Yeah.
And so, God, it's going to drive me nuts to what movie that was. but I remember seeing it. And it was threw me off a little because it was winter.
Mm-hmm.
This time around, and there's a lot of snow, and I was like, oh shit, they're gonna make the Christmas Batman.
Yeah.
And it kind of freaked me out a little bit. I was like, I don't know what to make of that.
Oh no, when I saw the snow, I was immediately enamored.
What year was that? Was that 92?
91, I believe, actually.
Okay, so I was just starting to get into girls, I guess. Are starting to notice the opposite attraction to women, mm-hmm. Or the attraction to women. I can't speak. And I remember seeing Michelle Pfeiffer in that Catwoman suit and being like, oh, yeah.
Swing.
Yeah. I'm sorry. I got to do that. And I saw the film opening night again,
mm-hmm.
and I loved it.
I did, too.
I thought it was amazing. I thought it was a dark, weird-ass... Like, if I had the film knowledge at the time, I'd have been like, this is like if Terry Gilliam did a fucking Batman film, you know? Like, it was just so bizarre. Like,
yeah.
Penguin was so disgusting, and the way they told the story of Catwoman and Max Schreck and,
mm-hmm.
Walken. I mean, it's fucking Walken, you know?
Yeah.
I mean, like, it was so cool, casting choice. But, you know, something about the marketing of that never stuck with me.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I didn't get as excited merchandise-wise.
Actually, I do remember the marketing really clearly on that. There was I can definitely go into that. I think you were a little older at that point, and as mm-hmm. you said, you were into girls. So maybe that will definitely kind of divert your attention from a lot of that. McDonald's definitely did the Happy Meals and all that stuff with Batman Returns.
Yeah, I remember that.
Which is really kind of crazy that you think about it now, because the Penguin had his own toy, and it's like... I don't know if I'd make some of these toys. Like, Catwoman had a toy. It's just like, okay, so this is definitely a different film than the previous one. But yeah, I remember those very clearly, and I had all of them. They're a little wind-up duck toy that the Penguin was in.
Oh yeah,
stuff like that.
I'm actually, all this is coming back now.
Yeah, and the merchandising, like, this was the first time that the Batman figures actually looked more like the ones in the movie. Mm-hmm. And I had an assortment of those. You know, there was one toy that I actually had that was, from what I understand, was pretty rare. It was something that they intended to originally put in the film, but they pulled out, but they had still made the toy. And the toy looked exactly like the depiction in the comic book, but it was actually Robin. And it was the currently redesigned one at that time, which was the Tim Drake Robin costume, which had the, you know, the green sleeves and stuff like that. Mm-hmm. And green sleeves, but he had like the green tights on instead of like bare naked, whatever, and bare naked and the naked legs or whatever you want to call it. And so it was kind of a little bit more like, you know, how they ended up going with him in the comics. But he was not in the film, but I had the toy and I was really excited about that because it was just like, oh my God, it's a Robin figure, you know, and I actually had that toy before the movie even came out. So I thought that he was going to be in the film. I was a little disappointed when I didn't see it. Anyway, hiccup. But, I mean, yeah, like, my impression of the film at that time was just like, this is the best thing ever. You know? Because it's Batman. I don't care. It's years later that I'd go back and watch that film and be like, what? You know?
Just yeah, like... I mean, I guess, like, the thing... Go ahead, sorry.
No, I wasn't going to say anything. I'm good.
No, I was just going back to the marketing thing. Mm-hmm. You know, like, I guess, like, you know, with the Batman 89, like, there was a certain aura about the marketing
mm-hmm.
and the merchandise that wasn't really quite there on Returns.
Yeah, like, not as much.
I don't think they really knew what to do with it.
Yeah.
Because it was so different. I mean, they put out a Batman movie that was borderline a Christmas Batman movie.
Yeah.
It worked really well, but I don't think the people that were doing the merchandising really knew what to do with it.
Didn't it come out in the summer, too?
I think so. That's what I was just trying to determine. I'm actually going to look that up because that's going to bother me.
I think it was a summer film.
I think you're right.
Just, you know,
it just always struck me as weird.
I kind of would like, though, if they make a film that's set in a period of time like winter to actually come out in winter. I don't know.
Oh, yeah.
Like, they even did that with the recent Batman movie and they set it in winter. Yeah, I kind of would feel more like connected into what's happening in that story if it actually were winter, even if it's not necessarily the same type of weather. It still put me in the right frame of mind, I guess.
You're right, by the way.
Yeah, about the...
It is June 19th.
Yeah, because the films came out, like, always in the summer, right around the same time. Yeah, I mean, it was just... I don't know. Like, the merchandising definitely was there. I do remember a lot of it, but... You know, the first round, when the first movie came out, you had a lot of the gold symbols everywhere. And the only thing they had for that film was the black and white Batman logo.
Yeah.
And that one didn't have as much effect on me. And that's weird. Now black and white is, like, my big thing. But during that time, I don't know. I mean, I was definitely impressed with Catwoman. I remember that. I had actually asked... And this was a weird combination. I don't know why I asked for this, but my grandmother actually reminded me this one time. She's like, you wanted a Batman mask that had Catwoman's white stitching on it.
That's actually a really rad idea.
You know what? I was just recently, we're talking to a friend, and she was looking for a handbag. And I'm like, it'd be really cool if there was like a black latex bag out there with like white stitching holding it together and just... add in a few elements that look like, you know, Catwoman. And you don't have to put a logo on it or anything like that. Just, it would embody the look. It would steal that, you know. And I'm like, that was just a really cool look. I mean, you know, you can say whatever you want about, like, you know, the characters and the story of Batman Returns. But visually, the film, to me, is even more impressive just because of the starkness. Like, I like the bat suit more in that film because it seemed to actually fit him a little bit better. You know, the Batmobile doing the crazy, like, you know, split apart in the train thing was just, that definitely blew my head, you know, blew my hair back. You know, even just the visual style of all the umbrellas of the Penguin and everything like that. And, you know, it just all really was impressive. So,
yeah, something that always, like, kind of, got me about that film. You know, Prince did the first soundtrack for the 89 Batman.
Mm-hmm.
And then, like, the second one comes out, and we got Susie and the Banshees.
That was a big departure. Oh, but yeah. You know what? We should talk a little bit. Let's go back to the original one, just to talk about Prince and the music. So, do you know the story behind that? Like, why Prince did the entire album for that movie?
Well, it was because of Kim Basinger, wasn't it?
Well, from what I actually understand is that Warner Brothers, and I actually saw this in, like, behind the scenes or something, one of their Blu-ray features, Warner Brothers asked him for a song for the movie. And he came back with him with, like, a full album. Yeah, just like,
I thought like part of that was because he was dating Kim Basinger at the time. Is
was
that
he? Or yeah. Wasn't she already with Alec Baldwin at that time?
No, I think she was actually with Prince, and that was right before Alec Baldwin.
Oh, okay.
And I think after they split up, they started dating. But yeah, I think that was also a big part of like what kept his inspiration there for the soundtrack, which would make a lot of sense.
Yeah. And since you mentioned Kim Basinger, that's the other really thing that's interesting about that film that people don't really seem to know. So she wasn't originally supposed to be Vicki Vale. You know, it was actually supposed to be... Oh, man. Do you know who I'm talking about?
No.
Sean Young.
Oh, yeah, her. The one that went nuts to play Catwoman.
Right. Yeah, because she lost her opportunity with Vicki Vale. What happened was she had a riding accident 2 days before shoot. And she was injured and she could not do the role. And so they were scrambling 2 days before production to find a new Vicki Vale. And they ended up going to Kim Basinger, and she said yes instantly. And they signed her, and she was on set the following day. So, I mean, that was kind of a crazy story. I mean, I was thinking about that, like, in an alternate reality where Sean Young didn't mess up her back, you know, or have a horse injury. She would have been Vicki Vale. How different would the film have been with Sean Young as Vicki Vale?
I don't think it would have been as good, actually.
Ugh. I mean, like, you can kind of see that clearly the film, because, you know, when they cast women in film, or even, well, mostly women, they always kind of, like, try to play up different types of women, you know, different types of looks. So in this film, you also had Jerry Hall, who was playing Felicia, which was Carl Grissom / Joker's girlfriend, you know, toy at one point, I guess, or art piece. You know, she definitely had a lot of, you know, a similar look to Kim Basinger. But, you know, they were so desperate that they were like, we have to find someone quickly to fill this role.
Right.
Yeah. And, just imagining, like, I told my mom that Sean Young was almost Vicki Vale, and you should have just seen the look of just like shock and horror. She just was not into that. She's like, Sean Young from Dr. Jekyll and Mrs. Hyde.
Wow.
My mom, I guess, really hated that particular film. But yeah, it was such a weird choice. Like, I'm glad that that did not work out. I'm really, really glad that didn't work out.
Yeah. I just, something that I was just remembering is, did you know in Batman Returns that the Penguin, Danny DeVito, stayed in role the entire time they were shooting the film?
He did that method.
Yeah. And could you imagine, like, trying to eat a sandwich on break and that fucking thing comes up to you and starts talking to you? That's got to be weird, right?
Oh, God. The whole role was weird. That would have made it. And you know what? Here's the sad thing, too. Did that improve that performance at all? Nope. I mean, well, I don't know. If you're looking for, like, a troll-like creature who... How did they come to the decision that that was Oswald Cobblepot?
I have no idea.
Like, in the comic book, he just is short and kind of has a penguin-like look, especially because of the tuxedo. Let's take it a little bit further. Let's make him a penguin. Half human, half penguin. Just that makes sense.
With Paul Rubens as his father.
Yes, definitely. And Pee Wee Herman playing daddy.
And I don't know if you know this or not, but it was originally supposed to be, what's his name, Burgess Meredith?
Oh, he was supposed to play the father.
And he got ill right before playing the role.
Oh, okay.
And so they had to quickly replace him with Paul Rubens.
Ah, I got you.
Which would have been a great nod, I think. But
yeah, but I'm glad they didn't do that ultimately, because it's like he's not anything like... He's not even the Penguin. I mean, it's just some weird... I don't even know. I mean, that was just such a disturbing... Like, honestly, the one thing that... Even all the stuff that happens in the first Batman film, there was never a point where I was, like, you know, skittish and looking away from the screen because I was just so freaked out by what was happening. That film definitely, there was something in that film that really bothered me, and that was when the Penguin bit that guy's nose in the campaign office. and you got the blood going everywhere and everything like that. And I'm like, what the hell is this? Like, that was actually the one part of the film I'm like, oh, God. Like, why did that happen? Why did he have to go do that?
Yeah, I don't know. Like, and don't anybody take offense to what I'm about to say. They almost kind of made the Penguin retarded.
Yeah.
And that always kind of sat weird with me in that film.
Yeah, he was really kind of not intelligent, which I'm like, you know, make him intelligent. I mean, the Penguin character has always been intelligent. You know, he's kind of running a crime empire. And I didn't even mind the whole Red Triangle Circus gang, you know, and stuff like that. So that was just like, fine, whatever. You know, it is a gang of some sorts. So if they want to go more theatrical with it, then... And I wasn't probably thinking actually that at that time. I mean, I think Batman the Animated Series was on air. Maybe not. Maybe, I think actually I take that back. That was 92.
Yeah,
that was 92. So that wasn't even on air. So I didn't really know more about that about the Penguin character, except for the Burgess Meredith character on the original series. But yeah, that was a really really weird take. I did like Catwoman. I did remember thinking as a child, like, she fell into a vat of cats.
Yeah, which is a total Tim Burton thing to do.
Yeah, but I still loved how she kind of acted in that film. It just, you know, I mean, as you get older, then of course you look at it and you're like, okay, this is kind of stupid. Why is this Max Schreck character even here? You know, like, you know, Batman didn't save the Ice Princess or whatever. It was a little funny. And also there was a big kind of scale back in that film too, because Gotham in the first film did feel like a real city, even though it was on a back lot. In that one, it felt really kind of small town, you know, just there was not really many people walking around. That city felt very different. So
yeah. And then we lost Tim Burton.
Yes, we lost Tim Burton.
We got the excellent directorial superhero debut of Joel Schumacher, which was Batman Forever, which, to be honest, at the time, I didn't really hate.
Mm-hmm. No, actually, I was back on board with Batman Forever because I was in fifth grade, and so I was a little bit older at that point, and the Warner Brothers store was around in force, and I was living out here in California with my mom. So, my mom was definitely looking forward to that. You had a new Batman, you had Val Kilmer coming into the role, and no one knew what to expect with that, but I knew him, and I'm like, oh my God, it's from Top Gun, what's his name? And I didn't know his name at the time. Iceman. And, anyway, I mean, I was like, that's cool, and then they were like, they're gonna have Robin in this one, and I was sold. Instantly.
Unfortunately, we got Chris O'Donnell as Robin, which I thought was like one of the worst casting decisions of all time.
Well, do you know who almost was cast as Robin? He was one of the considerations. Christian Bale.
How weird would that have been?
He wouldn't have been Batman. That's safe to say. You know, he just would not have been Batman. I don't know. I mean, Chris O'Donnell was whiny. That was the problem. If they had made him any other way, he would have been fine, I think. I mean, not the best choice ever, but better than, you know, than being a whiny version of that character. So, anyway.
Yeah, I mean, I think that the thing about this, and I'll kind of abbreviate a couple of these, because, like, the next Batman film after this is not a lot that we could cover that people don't know already about. But, you know, the thing about that Batman is it actually was more a return to form soundtrack-wise, because it actually created some pretty big hits.
Yeah, and I'm actually looking for one right now.
Hold Me, Thrill Me, Kiss Me, Kill Me by U2. That was a big one. And one that we all know, Kiss From a Rose by Seal.
Yep, and that's what I was looking for. And here it is, actually. Let's see if we can listen to a little sample. Nope, just an advertisement. Anyway, I'll put that in, actually, in the audio bed of the song here.
It also has that. I still love this song, Bad Days by the Flaming Lips.
Mm-hmm.
It's a song where Alfred Enigma goes home.
Yeah, and you were sort of stuck at your job, but in your dreams you can blow his... Or something like that. You hate your buzzer, I remember that one.
I thought that was cool. But I like that soundtrack.
I did too.
When it came out.
Oh, yeah.
And I'm not a huge Seal fan, but the song's always kind of been nostalgic for me because I think I went on a date with the girl I ended up dating for 10 years.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. And that was kind of like our soft song, which I wasn't a soft guy. I listened to like Nine Inch Nails and Slayer, so I don't know how that all worked out. But
all of a sudden, being a teenager is weird. Song. Yeah, I was definitely into that soundtrack quite a bit. I was listening to that nonstop, so much so that I had to have two tapes of it because I ended up breaking one of them because the tape actually snapped and it couldn't be repaired. So, yeah, I had two versions of that, and I remember very clearly, too, during that time, like every school talent show during that era, it's like there were five people who went on stage during a talent show and did Kiss by a Rose.
Yeah. At least it wasn't the Flintstones.
Yeah. Damn, that would be me and my other friend.
I love that story still.
But it's actually funny. My friend who did the whole Flintstones thing was the one who went up and sang Kiss by a Rose during the talent show. One of many.
Yeah.
There was a new Batmobile in that film. Now, I will be honest. I love the original Batmobile. I think I may like that one even more. You know, just because it was really cool. I did actually like the neon rib cage thing going on. And it was still enclosed at that time, too. So I was on board with all those different elements.
But Tommy Lee Jones, I don't know what it is about him in this film.
Mm-hmm.
Is ridiculous. Mm-hmm. It's just the whole thing is ridiculous. Like Jim Carrey, not a huge fan, honestly, but I could accept him as the Riddler.
Oh, you know? Like, he did a decent job, too, especially in the terms of that film. Yeah, I think he did good.
But Two-Face, really?
I didn't like him.
He was originally played by Billy Dee Williams, fucking Lando Calrissian. And then somehow we ended up with Tommy Lee Jones. As Two-Face. Yeah.
Well, if we still had a Tim Burton Batman film at that time, I mean, like, that's an interesting conversation really to go into because he had plans. Like, you know, they were going to make Billy Dee Williams Two-Face. And originally there was talks to do that in Returns, and then they decided that they would do that in the third one. And Billy Dee Williams didn't want to come back either. That was the other problem, which I'm sure he regretted that decision later on because he didn't really do much after any of that.
Had too much coke before the fire.
I guess. But he was a great... He really was a great Harvey Dent. I mean, I was just watching it. Like I said, I watched that film a couple of times recently. And, you know, he just... I was just thinking, like, as I was watching that, what would his character actually have turned into as Harvey Dent, Two-Face, you know?
Oh.
And I don't know. I mean, it's... something that is just going to be one of those mysteries. I don't know. I wish one day one person would go back and animate, you know, like what would have happened, you know, just because it's like an interesting thing. They could have do that animated series style, and that'd be pretty cool, I guess. I don't know.
Yeah. So after this film.
We've already skipped on from Batman Forever.
Well, I mean, there's not really a lot to talk about there. I mean,
oh, it's... dude, come on. I know that film. Line for line, from the beginning to the end.
That makes me want to hug you.
no, I mean, I own the VHS, so.
I have this humongous crush on.
That was my first real crush, too. That was, like, around my age for that to really happen. So, yeah, huge, humongous crush on Tom Cruise, ex-wife.
And then we got Batman and Robin. What is there to be said about this film that hasn't been said? The Batgirl things what really fucks me up about Batman and Robin.
Yes. Well, there's a few things that really fuck me up about Batman and Robin.
But that one, I watched it recently. My kids like it, so I have to watch it.
Oh, you should have never have told them that existed.
To me, it's more of a riff tracks type of thing. And going on in my head, you know, like
there's actually a great riff tracks of that. Yeah,
Sammy Ice jokes can go before the fucking film dies.
Mm-hmm.
It's actually the first time in my life. I don't know. I gotta look at the timeline here. There's two films that I've actually walked out of and requested my money back on. Speed 2, Cruise Control, and Batman and Robin. And I got, that's the two films that, like, I don't know what was up at the box office. They were like, I was like, yeah, I just sat through 30 minutes of this. I don't really want to watch the rest. I just want to go home. I just want my money back. Mm-hmm. And they'll be like, yeah, I watched it last night. Here you go, sir.
Oh, man. Well, I don't know
how that happens, but
Batman and Robin was a catastrophe. And I was a little bit older at that point. I was in junior high. The first time I saw it, I really tried to make myself like it. I really did. And then I went back and saw it at the Dollar Theater, like, because it was already in the Dollar Theater, like, 2 weeks later. And, you know, I was like, okay, you know, maybe it wasn't, I don't know, maybe there was something wrong. And I didn't have really anyone to talk to that film about, because it was kind of a, you know, an outcast kind of kid, and I wasn't living near anybody at that point. Because this was motel years for me. We were living in a motel at this point, you know. And so I went back there, and I watched it again, and I wanted to cry. I was just so depressed. It was so bad. And, you know, I was trying to, like, blame it on different things in the film. Like, well, maybe if you remove this, you know. And my thinking was, like, why didn't Val Kilmer come back? He did okay. Why is George Clooney here? He's really bad. You know, and it's like, he's great on ER. What's happening here? And, you know, but really, Alicia Silverstone as Batgirl is just a train wreck.
And they made her Alfred's niece, which was, like, completely off of continuity from the actual story of Batgirl.
She's blonde. She's kind of chubbed out a little bit. She had the chubby cheeks thing going on.
Yeah.
You know, like, she, I don't know. I don't know what
was going
on. She's
not Barbara Gordon. Let's just be real.
Right. Exactly. I mean, there was some weird stuff happening in that film. But when she finally got into the damn bat costume, like, the things that really bothered me about her character is every time she said something, it sounded like she said it with a lisp. Fill me up, yeah. Uncle Alfred.
Yeah, and now she looked good in the bat suit, don't get me wrong. Because I had a huge Alicia Silverstone crush in the 90s.
Yeah, me too.
But you know
it's
what?
This baggage.
I just looked up the soundtrack to this.
It's horrendous. It is horrendous.
Okay, you know, I like the Smashing Pumpkins song, because that's back when they were still good.
Yeah, which was actually tied in with this film, too. Like, but, that was the release.
Dude. I mean, Gotham City by R. Kelly was a precursor to Trapped in the Closet.
Yeah.
I'm surprised he wouldn't be like, and a midget came out and he fought some crime. I don't know. Because that dude loves some midgets. And then you got Lazy Eye by the Goo Goo Dolls.
Oh, God.
Fun for Me by Maloko, which I have
Fee
no idea.
Fee-fi-fo, Fun for Me.
Was that it?
Yeah, I had the soundtrack, too. Or it was bought for me. I did not listen to that to death.
Underworld, Moaner.
Yeah, that was one song that they played, I think, during their motorcycle scene or whatever.
I guess.
Yeah.
This is like that transitional period in the 90s where, like, alternative soundtracks really popular, like Empire Records, Trainspotting, you know, things like that. And then, like, the shitty later 90s music was coming. It's like the record execs like, well, we got a conundrum here.
95, we were good. 97 rolls around. Okay. Let's push some of those bands out that no one listens to. Hopefully this will boost some album sales.
So, yeah, enough about Batman and Robin, because, like, God, I just want to bang my head against the wall when I think about the existence of that film.
I do want to point out a couple of things about it, since I've given some facts about the other films. And not Batman Forever as much, but it wasn't really much there. But so Batgirl was supposed to wear the full, like, horn cowl, you know. Her head was too big for it to fit. I guess in between time from pre-production to actual filming, she grew. And her, I don't know, they couldn't fit her damn head back into the mask. So that's why they ended up giving her, like, the Rama Domino mask. There was something else, but it's not really important. So,
yeah, I'm clueless.
Did you ever read the script for Batman 5?
Did I?
Mm-hmm. I think it was called Batman Eternal.
Is this the, Was this the one Schumacher was going to do, or Aronofsky?
This was going to be another Schumacher film.
I did not, but I would really like to hear about that.
Okay, so this one, of course, was going to feature the Scarecrow.
I didn't know of the existence, by the way. I just haven't read the script.
Right. The Scarecrow was definitely a part of that. But, you know, they were actually going to reduce Alicia Silverstone's character to Oracle, and they were going to introduce Barbara Gordon. So I was like, okay. So they wanted to bring another actress. I guess Alicia Silverstone was not going to be available for the film, so they thought that they would take that opportunity to just bring in the real Barbara Gordon for a change. So it was going to be about Dick going to college a little bit. And the plot details, it's been so long since I've really thought about that film. But basically, Batman dealing with the fear gas. I'm sure there's going to be some things about him, like, overcoming, you know, a lot of fear of being, you know, like his parents' death or whatever. And I don't know. It was really, really atrocious. It was terrible. But it was somehow better than Batman and Robin. But that, of course, got ixnayed the moment the film bombed, because they had already greenlit Joel Schumacher to go into production on the next film before the film even came out, because the executives at Warner Brothers were so ecstatic what they saw with Batman and Robin, and they were so positive that that film was going to be the biggest hit in their company's history. And that did not happen.
No, it didn't. And I probably contributed to that by walking out and asking for my money.
Yeah.
Back. And I'm sure I wasn't the only one.
It was probably because of that film that all the Warner Brothers stores went out of business, because they had to figure out how to get the damn money back.
Dude, I have never in my life felt insulted watching a movie like I did when I saw that movie.
Yeah.
Like, I was really seriously butthurt.
Yeah.
About the first 30 minutes of that movie. I was like, what the fuck happened here?
I mean, it's so bad. Like, the Batmobile convertible, that's really bad. And you had the cooler car and the one before. And there's, like, a weird-ass motorcycle coming out from some sort of coffin from underneath the Batmobile. And there's some terrible puns about, this is why Superman works alone. And then when Robin drives through the museum window, or door, or whatever it is, I think it's the door, and makes the perfect Robin symbol in the wall. That's when I knew.
It was awful. Like,
it's like, shit has gotten real. I could buy a Batmobile driving up a wall, but a perfect Robin symbol through a damn wooden door. Oh, man, that was just atrocious.
It was. It really was.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I can't think of anything good to say about it. Moving on. So, for a while there, we thought we were going to get, by Darren Aronofsky, Batman Year One, which was probably the worst idea ever.
Yeah.
Because they had, like, what, wasn't Robin working in as a mechanic?
Yep.
Or something. It was going to be Marlon Wayans.
Well, it was going to be a Bruce Wayne who had rejected his wealth and was being raised by a guy named, like, Alfie. You know, who was like a mechanic, and it was going to be like a Batman who started off on like a really poor level and took like shit from a garage and made a Batmobile, and, you know, like a real poor man's Batman. And I'm like,
I honestly kind of halfway have to wonder if that was not like Darren Aronofsky fucking with the studio.
Yeah, maybe. Maybe he wanted out of the project
for that. Yeah, I just, the whole thing is weird.
He may have owed them a film, and this was it. And they brought him in, and that was his proposal.
To get him off his back?
Yeah, which would have been very smart then.
So that never happened, and we waited a while. And then I don't really want to go individually into each one of these.
Yeah, and honestly, we don't really need to. I mean, because, you know, I kind of look at the Dark Knight trilogy as something we can definitely hit on another occasion, because they're definitely different films. So, but, you know, you had those original films, and they made a huge impact. I mean, you know, it's sad to see that they kind of dwindled there at the end. But, you know, it is something that definitely left a big mark on us, especially those first couple. And actually, really, for me, Batman Forever, just because I was at that age, and it hit me right dead near, like, I don't know, right in my forehead, I guess. It was just there.
I would like to discuss one thing about the trilogy. Something that we kind of talked about recently. We have talked about what defines Batman. And yeah, there are all these. And I do like the trilogy, don't get me wrong. But it never honestly ever felt like Batman to me.
Yeah.
I mean, it is Batman. It's a variation of Batman. A kind of alternate reality version of Batman. But to me, it never embodied like the greater stories of Batman. The way You'd want them to. That's kind of why I'm stoked about the Zack Snyder one. I think it. I have a feeling in my gut that this is going to be the one that kind of addresses Batman more realistically, like he is in the comics, than the actual Dark Knight trilogy.
Right. Yeah, that's true.
So I don't know. I enjoy them as crime films. I enjoy them as a version of Batman. I just don't. I'm still waiting for another Batman film that gets me the way 89 Batman did.
Yeah, that's true. I mean, I'm still waiting for that myself. You know, it is something that I am really looking forward to. And, you know, I mean, hopefully we start to see that again from these new films that are coming out. So we'll see, I guess.
Yeah, I mean, because there is a that is missing from that trilogy.
Yeah, you repeat that. You broke up there really badly.
Oh, I was just saying that there was something fantastical about Batman that was really missing from the Dark Knight trilogy.
Yeah. I mean, you know, the Dark Knight trilogy is great, but it's not really Batman. You know, it's a crime saga with a guy who kind of dresses like Batman. You know, it's almost like a spoof of the whole thing, but like a serious take, you know? And I love those films too. But yeah, I'm wanting to go back to a Batman that I feel does connect into these other characters that you can do a character like Mr. Freeze and it doesn't feel ridiculous, you know, because you couldn't do something like that with that trilogy, you know. So I am just excited about the possibilities. I'm always excited. Why am I always using that word? But I am. I am excited about the possibilities of what this new Superman series and Batman, you know, of course, like could really bring, because you may get back to that a little bit. You know, you may get away from just these very serious real-world interpretations where you may have like a perfect marriage, a little bit of what we had in 89 and a little bit of what we got from Christopher Nolan. And then if we had a balance like that, then I think that's where the sweet spot is, personally.
I agree. Well,
and I just want to say, too, I'm going to be taking a lot of photos here at the Warner Brothers tour that I'm taking this Saturday.
Yeah, I'm totally not going to go, and I'm sad.
Yeah, but there's a Batman exhibit there. If you guys are in the Los Angeles area, do that very quickly. It's about $54 per person for the tour, and it's about 4 hours. And they got a Warner Brothers store there, which is the only one left in the country. So, yeah, I would go check that out, definitely.
Well, we better do that shit when I get out to L.A. So.
Absolutely. The minute you come out here, I'm going to have tickets for that, man. Seriously.
That'd be sweet. Well, I think we've exhausted our Batman talk for tonight.
Yeah.
We just did the other podcast right before this. We've probably been talking for about two, three hours almost.
Yeah.
But it was awesome. I really enjoyed it. It's kind of cool to get the focus in on something for once and not bounce all over the place. So,
right.
Especially about one thing you and I are kind of obsessive about. So,
definitely.
But thank you guys so much for listening to us babble on about Batman for an hour. With that said, this is Popcorn. I'm Brock Vincent Sharp.
My name is L. Nichols.
And you can find us at Facebook at Straight Popcorn, Twitter at Straight Popcorn, also on the iTunes store and Stitcher as well. And never forget, we have straightpopcorn.com.
Yep. And
just like Prince would say, keep pop. Dig it now.